Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation. Subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Rocket Mortgage. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home is much more than a house. That's why when you find the perfect place for you and your family, getting a mortgage shouldn't be difficult and it shouldn't get in the way. And that's why there's Rocket Mortgage. Their team of mortgage experts, number one goal is to make home buying process a smoother, easier process for you. Quicken Loans help millions of Americans achieve the dream of home ownership. And when you're ready to purchase a home and it's the home of your dreams, well, then they can help you too. J.D. Power ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row and highest in mortgage servicing 5 years in a row. Not too shabby. Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. Rocket Mortgage. Right, Dawson?
Visit rocketmortgage.com/Adam and take the first step toward the home of your dreams. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage.
Hey, man, thanks for tuning in. Before we get started with the first half of the show, I tell you, man, we get into the superior genes of the Nigerian people. I tell you about my heartbreak in Malibu as it pertains to hiking and car ticketing, and we cover everything under the sun. First, JB Weld. If you have a repair, you need something to fix something, big or small, around the house or in the garage or over here at work. This is all we use. JB Weld. Epoxy adhesives have been made in the U.S. for more than 50 years. It's the world's strongest bond. Pros use JB Weld because it fixes metal, wood, plastic, and more. They have products, and they make it for just about any surface. So you need to repair something around the house, use JB Weld, or you want to do something at the shop or in the garage, JB Weld. The strength, it matters, and that's why you don't glue it, you JB Weld it. You don't use household glue. What would the deaf frat guy say? That's JV. Don't go JV, go JB. See what I did there? JB Weld. JB Weld, world's strongest bond, and you can get it at Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, True Value, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, Amazon, and more. JB Weld. All right, let's start that, light that fuse.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and streaming live on YouTube, this is The Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Akbar Bajabiamila, with Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a call from Instagram star Tank Sinatra. And now, no spoilers, he still hasn't watched the season premiere of Handmaid's Tale. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The judge about to get on, man. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Take your little phone device and just hit share right about now. And thanks in advance for that. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball Brian. That's right. He's coming in. We love that guy. wish I could say his name. So nice. He has that brother where you just go KGB, and then it's easier. That's how we have to do it.
I guess it's AGB, right?
Yeah. It doesn't mean anything, though.
That's
KGB
that's
has
true.
A meaning, that's so it's right. super important that we take the guy, the tall African man, and somehow associate him with the Russian Secret Service operatives. Right. But anyway, so we got that. Much to complain about. I had a thought. We're talking about progressive gay rights on yesterday's show.
And not being in a roundabout sort of way.
And not being nauseated by the act.
And we were talking about how evolved we are as a society, how heterosexual men, and I don't mean American men, I think heterosexual men have a built-in part of their brain that when they see graphic gay sex, their hand sort of goes up. Like, they go, oh, they turn
like
their head.
Next?
Or I don't,
oh,
yeah.
I wasn't sure.
No, you got to pull that bakery ticket.
Right. That's right.
No, they turn, they look. That's it's a reflex that heterosexual men have. In other countries, they act on it.
They're, right, yeah.
Yes.
They go, I don't like that, and now I'm going to get a pool cue, and I'm going to beat that person.
Right. The knee-jerk reaction.
We have the same part of our brain light up, and then we go, all right, I'll just switch a channel or go the other side of the street. That's right. how we do it. So it's evolved. I wish the rest of the world was evolved, like we're evolved.
The other side of the street, so as not to encounter the sex that's happening in front of us.
I shall move away from this thing rather than try to stop it or injure it or hurt it. So,
by the way, to your point, I got a little letter from Gio about this, proving your point, because he's such an amazing detective. He said that in 2005, Dr. Drew was, I'm paraphrasing here, but did some sort of like an MRI light up thing.
Functional
about this.
MRI.
Do you remember this? Specifically about this subject.
Yes.
And it concluded the same thing that you did.
Yes. When you, we talked about on Loveline, I seem to remember it even being earlier than that. But yes, you're right. Drew had a functional MRI. Functional MRI do not lie, because when they show you a picture of a kitten or a picture of a pregnant woman or a picture of gay sex or a picture of whatever for a race car, we see what happens in your brain.
Right.
Males and females are different. The race car and the puppies would probably do different things
wildly
for different people. Mm. But when Drew was in this situation, I think they showed him some gay erotica, or he probably brought it. He just whipped it out. But either way, the part of your brain
got to the car.
The part of your brain does something. It's not. Everything we do is like, oh, it's cultural. Oh, it's cultural. Oh, it's cultural. Well, how does culture start?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, how do you, let's just say you're blank slate. Let's just say Sonny's a blank slate and Natalia's a blank slate. So they just start, how do we get to the point where Sonny loves sports and love trains and love that, and Natalia loves dresses and Fergie and dancing and makeup? How did we do it? If it's just society.
Well, you foisted those things upon them, obviously.
Right. How do we get it started? How does it stick? How does it work? You know, we just go, society's making you think that way. What is society and how does society get started? I would argue, no, this is more of a function of the male brain or the female brain or the heterosexual male brain or whatever it is. And then that becomes society. What we try to do is we try to manage society. We go, okay, at some point, we're going to arrest you guys or we're going to hurt you or injure you. Now we'll see if we can evolve past that. Right. We can't evolve past the brain part, but we will evolve past the action part. Mm. So anyway, another good sign if you're gay in our society. I was thinking about Pete Buttigieg, and I thought, oh, he's gay. And then I thought, openly gay man is going to run for president. And then I paused and I went, is that good or is that bad? And then I thought, in 2019, I think it's good. I think it's good for a couple of points.
Yeah.
You know, Beto doesn't get any intersectional points.
Mm-hmm.
He's
right.
A white dude. He's married to a woman. She has some money. He has some money. They come from some money. Beto gets no intersectional points.
Right.
Buttigieg gets some intersectional points because he's gay. And the notion that in the past, any other time in history, just about, but go back 50 years, especially if you're a politician, you were gay.
Oh, you kept that quiet.
Very quiet. And as a matter of fact, if somebody had pictures or information, you paid.
Whatever the price.
You paid whatever. And you had your sister's best friend accompany you to every event and opening
every dinner
and everything. You had to set, we had to set you up. You needed a beard. So the fact that it went from major league minus points and commonly
curricular,
not usable. So if somebody found this out, you were now
disqualifying.
You were disqualified. Went from disqualifying to, well, I'll give him a little bump over Beto.
It's quite a swath
because he is gay.
Yep.
That's progress.
Absolutely.
I'd say that's on a national level.
Yeah,
now, listen.
That a major party candidate could be considered by the general population for president. Yes. It's a step in the right
direction. And that it's a little bump. Now, it's not a bump. You can find plenty of pockets of people who it's not a bump for, but we have to go nationally. Mm. Look, you could have found a pocket of people in 1959 who are perfectly happy if the guy's gay. What I'm saying is, you could have found Helen Gorog, my grandmother, in North Hollywood, and in 1961 said to her, hey, this candidate's gay, and she would have went right on.
Over the moon.
He's going to get my vote. It's stupid to go there weren't pockets of good or bad or different in either swing. Right. I'm just saying collectively and nationally, him being gay is probably a little bump, which is you went from disqualified to, I'll give him a couple of points for being gay. That's a pretty big swing. I'm trying to think of, you don't see that kind of swing in the Middle East is what I'm saying.
Yes.
All right. So that was a thought I was having as I was backing out of my driveway today.
Backing out.
My Pete Buttigieg thought. Also, I have some hot flan takes as well.
Hot flan? No.
I was going to say, no.
Yeah. Brad Williams was very timely. So I had this, so I'll lay out the timing. I did 20 minutes on the rotting, decayed stairs in Malibu.
Oh, yeah.
Going down on Point Doom, going down to the sand. And what a, really, like, I took some pictures, but they don't do it justice. You have to walk that rickety stairway to really. I'm a guy who's climbed up ladders and scaffolding my entire life. I was a little shaky alone just going down the stairs. The guys holding their kids and stuff. If leaving your kid in the car when you run into the Circle K to buy a pack of cigarettes is child abuse, carrying your kids down those stairs is child abuse.
Those stairs look haunted.
So I had this funny scene, which is my daughter and her friend said last weekend, they said, can we go down to Paradise Cove and like hang out and swim in the water and take pictures of ourselves and eat super expensive fried stuff? And I said, yeah. But I do remember last time I went down there, it was $50 to park.
Huh.
And I'm like,
sounds about right.
It isn't the $50. It's the thought of $50 to park that I don't like. The Rams game, same thing. It's like $120 to park. Like, really? Again, it's not really the money. It's just sort of the thought.
Well, it's what would a 22-year-old Adam Carolla do in that situation?
I thought I would have bought that cove for that money.
Sell his car to pay for the park.
Right.
Right. So I said, you know, why don't I just drive you guys down to the end of the, down to the bottom of the hill where the parking lot is, and then you guys jump out, and I'll drop you guys off.
That's nice.
And then I'll pick you guys up in 3 hours or something. You got a phone. Let's call it 4:30. It's 1:30 now. I'm going to go drive down and walk around Point Doom, and you guys have your fun over here. Had this great thing where we drove down the hill, turned in to a little alcove. Both girls jumped out of the car, and of course, the parking lot guy, as they were out of the car and were closing doors, like, no unloading!
Oh.
Which is great. But one day, we will realize our relationship with parking people, and we'll all want to kill ourselves 1,000 times over.
What a racket.
We take the dumbest sacks of shit give them all the power in the world, and they just yell at rich people all day. You can't do that. You know, like they were out. They're like literally out of the car, and the guy was like yelling at us. No unloading. No unloading. And I get it. Like, I get there's a policy. They don't want everyone going down, dropping everyone off and not paying for the parking. But they're out of the car anyway. I was like, all right, fine. I go back up the hill.
Did you pack them back in the car?
I got in the car, and I turned around and went up the hill 40 feet, and I stopped. And then they just got out and walked down. But that's our... That's the new world order. Right. We just get yelled at by dumb guys. Well, Sinatra would have had those guys shot in his day. He would have shot the guy.
Tank Sinatra?
Tank Sinatra.
It is his day.
Talk to him about memes in a minute. But anyway. So I drop him off, and I drive down to Point Doom. And parking's weird, and I tell you, it's heavily enforced and everything else. And so I have this weird thing where I go, okay, it's not a good sign that we're super scared of the cops, especially when we're sort of law-abiding and tax-paying and everything else. But we all have that relationship of, like, oh, boy, the cops, oh, boy, who knows what they're going to do. And so I park down at Point Doom, and I park far enough away from the hiking trail and the world's scariest stairs so that you can park legally. It's like in a residential neighborhood, just a half mile away. And I'm sort of looking for signs, and I'm looking for no parking beyond this point or whatever. They have a lot of that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clearly marked. Pull in far enough, park. Get out of the car, pull out my backpack. I'll tell you one thing about all the crazy exotic IPAs and different beers and lagers and everything that's going on these days. We are living... And these are salad days for the open container fans because they're when I was growing up, it's like you had Budweiser, Pepsi, and Coke. And you could see very clearly if someone was holding a Budweiser. Oh, my God. If you're holding a Coors versus a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi or a Shasta or an RC Cola, everyone knew.
Obvious.
There are so many different drinks now.
Energy drinks are in 16-ounce cans, and they've got their color black.
They're everything and all under the rainbow. A million energy drinks, a million coffee drinks, a million bubbly waters, no-cal, low-cal, medium-cal, everything, and just as many craft beers. Mm. So now you can crack a beer and put it in your hand and no longer have to worry about the bag or putting the Coke label on it or anything. You just walk down the street.
And on top of that, every craft beer comes in a can. The canning revolution. Everyone's all about cans.
So
some come in both, of course, but no.
I get out of the car. I get out. It's like 2:00. I'm like, all right, crack myself my IPA and just start walking. And as I'm walking for a minute and a half. Sheriff Truckster is coming at me.
That's right.
And I'm like, oh, goddamn. But I'm also like, don't chuck the can into the hedge because that's going to be a tell.
Could be a LaCroix for all you know.
It's really, I'm just like, it's an orange can I'm just holding. So I'm just like walking and it's like, all right. And let him drive by. And he drives by. And I'm like, okay. And I'm just walking. And I'd been parked for 81 seconds and I'm about 100 yards away. And I turn around, and the guy stopped at the car. Mm-hmm. And now I'm standing there holding a beer that I've taken two draws off of. And it's my only beer. And I'm just took two draws off a 16-ounce beer, and there's a cop, and he's by the car. And he's looking at the car, and he's getting out of his car. Boy. And he's, like, photographing stuff on the car. And I'm like,
just a fan.
What? Okay. What?
He wants his piano tuned.
No, I'm in Lynette's car. I'm in her Tesla X. And I'm like, okay, the car's parked legally. I'm pretty sure the car's parked legally, although all bets are off. You never know anymore. Sure, but I did this the weekend before, no problem. He's out of the car. He's like, and I'm like, I want to turn around, like walk back,
but
I'm
like throwing.
I don't want to chuck the beer into the ivy, but I don't want to walk up with an open container. Yeah. I'm not. Is he looking at me? Can he see me? Like, what am I looking? We're alone on a street. He can see me. I can see him. I'm holding a beer. He doesn't know it's my car at this point. Is he going to tow it? What's he doing? And I got this frosty cold beer I just cracked. I don't want to know what to do. So I just like keep walking and keep walking and keep walking.
Call his bluff.
And he's out of the car. He's around the car. He's this, that, and the other. And at a certain point, I kind of get down to the end. I chug half the beer. I dump the other half out and I throw it in a recycling container like at the end of the street. And then I turn around. I start walking back.
Smelling minty fresh.
Yeah. He then takes off in his cruiser. Aww. And when I get to the car, the people who own the house are out in front. And they're like, what's going on out here? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know what the guy's doing. Ticket for dealer plates.
No.
I called it.
The ticket for dealer plates I got less than 3 minutes after I got out of the car.
Does Lynette still have the cardboard plates? I mean, as opposed to the paper, you know, that I have.
She has the dealer. Hers just say like Tesla, whatever on it. They're in full effect now.
I called this on January 2nd. That's a beacon, man. A beacon.
No, they're I get it. They're giving tickets. Yeah. That's what they're going to do. I know they're going to do it. I just don't know how to avoid it other than put the actual license plates on the car.
That's out of the question.
I've had my dealer plates for a year and a half, and I have no intention of doing anything about it.
I got Lynette's car got ticketed on Sunday afternoon. On Friday, that was Sunday. On Monday at 6 o'clock, I got lit up and pulled over in my city. Fortunately, I heard the term Ace Man before the guy got to the window, and he told me to go ahead.
Get it fixed. Hit it.
But I was pulled over twice. Yeah. I got one car ticketed while it was parked. The other one was pulled over immediately. Also been pulled over on the way to LAX at 6 in the morning. So
we're pinned into a corner now, man. I know. I couldn't figure a way out of this one.
No, there isn't. Really isn't.
If the guy who yelled Ace Man gave you a ticket, he'd be required to stop listening to the show.
That's right.
How dare he?
So when the neighbors who were out front were talking to me, they're like, and I could see, I got a ticket. And they're like, yeah, the mom was kind of pissed. Like, what are they doing? You know what I mean? Don't they have better things to do? Because they go all the way down to the end of this point where there's no crime, and then they just hand out chicken. And by the way, these ain't meter maids and three-wheel Cushmans. Mm-hmm. These are guys driving loaded Ford, you know, with shotguns. And these are sheriffs. Like, these aren't the guys you want doing the chicken shit stuff. This is the no time for backup guys. But anyway, the mom was incensed. She's like, oh, God, look at him hassling all the taxpayers. And I said, and meanwhile, the staircase over there is a rusted tetanus shot ready to, that thing's not safe for people to travel on. Why don't they work on that? Why don't they take some of this money and put it into that?
And she's like, we're fine with that.
She agreed. And then I was like, look, can I just come in and have a beer?
A waste of half a mile.
Half a beer in that garbage over there.
I got to take the edge off, man. So I continued, and I went and walked down to Point Doom. And this time, I didn't want to deal with the stairs. I just walked up to the top of the bluff and this, that, and the other. That was on Sunday. And Brad Williams, our good comedic friend, sent us a picture or video, short video, from Tuesday when he took a video of Point Doom National Preserve on Tuesday.
It's a low angle.
Two.
All right, Adam. On your recommendation, I'm here at Point Doom. And look at this. Stairs are closed.
Wow.
Whoa.
They heard your podcast.
And they spared no expense with that printout and duct tape.
Is that a neighbor who put that up? Or is that, because I feel like
that does not look official.
Some authority would have some sort of official signage.
That's a
printout.
Paper.
Yeah. That's a printout in capital letters.
I don't know. All I know is I had a house down there for a while. I've been down to Point Doom 100 times. I've been doing it for years and years and years. I went on a rant about it a week ago, and Brad went back, and there's a sign that says stairs closed. Now, they should be closed. Don't get me wrong. They weren't closed on Sunday. The thing that's interesting, Bald, about the world's worst vigilante. Like, not quite your Charles Bronson.
Yeah, it's not Death Wish. He's more like...
Not a little Death Wish.
Death Suggestion. Death Hope.
I was there on Sunday. Sunday is clearly the busiest, most trafficked day of the week. And there were plenty of people walking around. That sign was not up. the sign went up Monday or Tuesday. So it's weird that whoever was in the neighborhood who thought, I'm going to put this up, seems like Friday would have been a better day to put that up. So Brad discovered it a couple of days. It's just the sign with just the thing that says the stairs are closed. Wow.
I wouldn't say you should feel drunk with power, but a little buzzed with power.
Half drunk. Yeah. Now, the good beer.
It would be good news if they were going to fix the stairs in a timely fashion. Mm. Oh, they'll just be closed in perpetuity. That's the way we roll.
Oh my God, look at those. Those aren't stairs.
I mean, we're looking at the literally the treads are rotted away.
People and have shoved they've shoved good sized, you know, almost football sized rocks underneath to support what little, you know, is left of the stairs.
Or in place of the stairs.
Exactly.
And I want to say this about duct tape. If you want to make a wallet or even a prom dress out of duct tape, I'm a big fan. But if you're repairing stairs down the side of a cliff with duct tape, we should talk. Yes. All right. I had, what do you got, Max Zapata? Oh, a football life. Sorry. You know, high profile, everyone.
What?
And Jim Brown is a colossal blowhard.
Yes.
And I've always known that about him because
he likes to pontificate a lot of things.
Many years ago when I was flying home from, I must have been flying home from doing the Hugh Hefner roast in New York. Because I was on the plane with Tommy Davidson and from In Living Color, I think. And he was on the roast, too. So it must have been him and Jim Brown. And they were just sitting next. It was my realization of one upside to being black is you get to be friends with every other black celebrity, whereas, like, I don't have that relationship with other white celebrities.
No,
as a matter of fact, it's quite the contrary.
With black celebrities starting out second base.
Yeah, not sexually. Jim Brown and Tommy Davidson couldn't be further away in the showbiz world, but they're like high-fiving and hugging it out and everything. And I realized, do you guys really know each other? Do you really like each other? It's a babe, brother. And they're like hugging and stuff. And I'm like, okay. So, they had closed off the airport. They said, we all have to stay in the plane. It must have been right after 9/11 because there was like, it was like bombs. Everything was a bomb everywhere. We're all on high alert. And I said, since we're all sitting around like, oh, we're going to be delayed. We can't get off the plane. We have to wait here, blah, blah, blah. And then I, of course, say to Jim Brown as a joke, look, you go first. I was thinking kind of Dirty Dozen. Like, you make a break. You break for the Skyway, and I'll be right behind you. And then if someone from American Airlines, like from the counter, or an air marshal, or someone steps in front of you, you take them out. Like, you go low. I'll cut off your block, and I'll head for like the Cinnabon and Freedom. And he just goes, I don't know if you heard, but I don't block for people.
Oh, my God.
It's a good yes ending.
I know. It's like, you have to take yourself like a serious douchebag, even in that. One of the biggest douchebag traits, hold your ears, Dawson, is they can't play along with stupid hypotheticals. Right. They still have their own. Like, if you go like, you know, like if you say that to you, like, would you rather blow a dude or bang a dude? They go, neither.
Neither one.
Neither
can
one,
pay
neither one of those things. Right. No. It's a super blowhard.
Play along.
Yeah.
So I knew it was a blowhard. And I'm watching the Earl Campbell story on Football Life. And Earl Campbell was a devastating running back. I mean, devastating. And as good as Jim Brown was in his era, he was just ahead of his time because he had the physique of a modern-day football player. And he was playing with a bunch of Bob Cousy types. I know I'm jumping sports here. There's a bunch of 175-pound DBs, and he was a modern
not
guy. But in a way, if you take a look at so Jim Brown's highlights are pretty impressive, but he's still running against boys. Earl Campbell's running against modern-day NFL players, men like Jack Tatum and guys like that. And
he's knocking him down like bowling pins.
He's putting a hurt on him. And I would argue that if you saw Earl Campbell's highlight, two-minute highlight reel of Earl Campbell versus a two-minute highlight reel of Jim Brown, you might be more impressed by Earl Campbell.
Physically.
And the speed was there, too. I mean, for a guy who was built like he was built. Anyway, so I'm watching it, and at a certain point, you know, and now Earl Campbell's a shell of himself, and of course he can barely walk, and he can barely move, and he's gray, and everything like that. And his son is talking about meeting Jim Brown and what Jim Brown had to say about his dad.
I'm sure it's very complimentary.
And I like paused it, and I was like, is he going to say your dad was the best running back in the whatever?
Oh,
and
please.
We'll play it. Now, this is Earl Campbell's son and Jim Brown just alone in the back of an autograph signing place or whatever. Let's see what. Now, he could tell. He can say anything he wants to say. So I paused. I was like, is this the blowhard that I know? Is he going to be super magnanimous? Here's what he said.
We were at an autograph show in Ohio. It was the first time I ever went to an autograph show with my dad, because he never let the kids go to these autograph shows and meet all these people. He never wanted that. So it was a spotlight that we never got to see. So I finally got to see it when I graduated from college. And Jim Brown is backstage. And for me as a kid, I was raised to say that Jim Brown was the greatest. He was the best. Jim Brown tells me, and he tells.
So I'm like, I'm literally watching going, is Jim Brown going to say your dad was the best?
Yeah.
Is Jim Brown going to do this? Because I'm like, he's such a blowhard. Yeah. But on the other hand, it's the guy's son and the guy's,
perfect storm,
guy's using a walker out there.
And why else would they include it?
Yeah.
And you can say whatever you want because you're backstage in Ohio at a thing. It doesn't, we're not going to change any of the record books.
You're not losing face.
Right. So what's he say to Earl Campbell's son?
As everybody else that's up there. Best running backs. You put Jim Brown first, and you put Earl Campbell second.
Oh,
the rest of them, you can put them in line any way that you...
Your daddy's second to me.
That's his version of a compliment.
You put
so
Jim Brown... My name's Jim Brown, so you put me, Jim Brown, first, and then you put your dad sloppy seconds, Earl sloppy seconds.
Your dad was very good. Better than almost anyone.
Right.
Not named Jim Brown, the best.
Right. Obviously, if we're just talking about NFL players who are in the building right now, he's
still second.
It was a funny thing because I was sitting there just going, what's he going to say? Now, again, this is your chance to say to the son, I thought your dad was better than me, or he was the best all the time, whatever it is. But he's also blowhard. Right. So we just said, I'm number one.
That's right. And to him, that's a supreme compliment.
Yeah.
Right.
And his
to be right
mind,
behind him.
He's like, hey, man, that's pretty good. Taste of my fumes.
Well, it is a great compliment on any level, but it's still the fact that he chose to just do that was very, very on brand.
Yeah.
Turns out Tommy Davidson and Jim Brown are good friends, according to TMZ. But maybe they met that day on the plane.
That's a good point.
You saw the bromance bud.
It was that fateful day in late 2001.
What do they talk about? Koofies and Pizzones?
How many of me would make one you?
All right. Let me hit... we got a Castrol Challenge question. You can tweet us at Adam Carolla Show with your Castrol Challenge, with your questions for Castrol Challenge. Brought to you by Castrol Edge. Formulated with fluid titanium technology, reduces friction and maximizes engine performance 3 times.
Three times, fool.
Stronger against viscosity breakdown, leading full synthetic oil. It's Castrol Edge. What do you got, Max Pata?
Martin of Samaria on Instagram wants to know, hashtag Castrol Challenge, Adam, most overrated movie or TV car?
I
was just screaming about this. The Bullet Mustang. Bullet Mustang's a pile of crap. It's worth like $4 million now, maybe $5 or $6 million. It's a junky Mustang that everyone goes nuts over, but there's not much to it. It doesn't handle. It's a pile of junk. It's a good story. People like the movie and everything else, but I'd have to say the Bullet Mustang is a pile of crap. Let's not forget the DeLorean from the DeLorean.
Don't you dare?
The DeLorean was a slug in stock trim. Like, the DeLorean was a heavy, underpowered vehicle that was probably good for 0 to 60 in a sports car, a 0 to 60, and probably like 7.9 or 8.1.
No,
like
you got to get to 88.
It's a slow car. Then when you pack the transflux capacitor onto it and everything else, that thing couldn't get out of its own way.
I would never get back to the future.
Those 1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah, I will go with those two cars, although... both those two cars, meaning the DeLorean from the film, right. There's a lot of knockoffs, but the one from the right. film, it's got to be worth well over $1 million now. And that Mustang, which, by the way, I might just get angry about because that's the story of the father who bought it out of like the recycler newspaper. Oh, yeah. Like the movie was shot in like 1969 or 1970, and he bought it out of the recycler in like 1973 for like $3,700, and he hid it.
Yeah, like in a barn.
He just hid it in a barn, and at some point that guy died, and he gave it to his son, and now it's $5 million.
Really?
Really? All right. Thank you, Castrol Challenge. Tank Sinatra's on the line. Do we have some of his memes?
He yeah, is
a,
here.
A world class. Yeah. He's making a living as a memer. Oh, wow.
That was quick.
Visually, now this is a picture of Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua, the guy we talked about with, look, to say Anthony, look, I have a dad bod. This guy, this guy's got way more than a dad bod.
Dope
it's not
bod.
Fair to the dads with the dad bods yeah. to show the... to say we have, he has side man titty. I was saying yesterday to the Sklar brothers, we're going to have to go away from the heavyweight belt to the heavyweight bra. This guy's going to get a studded right. picture of Muhammad Ali on one cup. And
the heavyweight girdle.
Jack Johnson on the other. Like, let's just have to give him a bra.
The this heavyweight Spanx.
Right. Visual representation of my desire to eat, defeating my desire to be in shape.
And it's Ruiz well lording said. Over
Ruiz yeah. lording over him. Yeah. Max, Pat, I realize we're going to have to somehow get the names of everyone worked out. Otherwise, I'm going to have to do some homework here. But what are some of his... Give us some of... Let's see. You got a picture of...
A little baby in a Snow White outfit meeting the actual Snow White at Disneyland.
So making a big face.
Yeah. When you overwhelmed.
When you meet your hero and it's everything you thought it would be.
I thought these things were always snarky and mean.
Oh, they can be sweet.
Like, some of his best ones are actually positive.
What?
Yeah.
Get out.
Get him off the phone.
Tank Sinatra? Wait a minute. Hold on a second. All right. Describe it. And just...
All right.
Put them in order of funny.
There's a giant ocean during a thunderstorm and six very specific lightning strikes coming into the ocean. And it says it's God's quote, fuck these six fish in particular.
Yes. Pretty good. Very funny and mean. That's what we're looking for. All right. Sorry. Okay. Tank?
Yes, sir.
How are you, man?
Good. I wish I would have known you guys were looking for mean memes. I would have had a whole barrage ready for you because a lot of them are pretty positive and clean.
Well, that's
try and
fine.
Do both, you know?
That's fine.
Clean up your act.
Yeah, exactly.
How the hell did you... You're a full-time professional memer?
It sounds insane when you say it, but there's no other way to say it. Yeah, I guess that's what I do. I listen, I've been a fan of comedy since I was a little kid. I grew up on, you know, sneaking Mad magazines, and I was watching Showtime Full Frontal Comedy at 12 years old. I loved being funny and being around people who were funny, and memes are just somehow the current iteration of my love for humor worked in time with how this thing, this meme culture took off. I just happened to be good at short little one-liners describing a picture that call into memory some kind of experience I had and make it funny and then make everyone feel like they're in on some inside joke. And if you can do that with a million people and make a million people feel like you understand them, then you can make some money. Yeah.
How did it begin? Weren't you doing real estate or like commercial real estate?
No, I was doing sales for a fence company.
Oh,
for a
that's
friend of
right.
mine.
I was picturing
Island.
Real estate, but
even,
yes.
even more boring.
Right. You're selling red dog-eared redwood cedar.
Exactly. Yeah. Chain link, stockade, all that. So, you know, in sales, if you're good at it, the better you get at it, the more free time you have. So I was good at it, and in between appointments, I would just scour the internet for pictures and write captions above them and post them. And it really, Adam, to be honest with you, I had resigned myself to the fact that I was just going to be a fence salesman for the rest of my life. And I was fine with that because I got to see my wife and kids during the day. I got to go to the gym. I got to take a nap every single day. Like, my life was good. I wasn't trying to escape anything, and the page just started taking off, and gaining more and more followers and traction. And then as I kind of forced my way into the page, you have a lot of anonymous, faceless meme pages. I didn't want to be that. I wanted to be Tank Sinatra. I wanted people to know that I was the person making the memes. And it wasn't, again, intentional. I didn't do it as a strategy. It's just the way it worked out. And when I became, you know, this started getting recognized on the street for these memes, I was like, maybe this is bigger than I realized, because I was still just having fun. I'm still having fun. It's a little bit different now, but two or three years ago, I was just having a ball.
How does one monetize a meme?
So, like, you know, anytime in the past, it was very limited as to how you could reach a lot of people. You had to go on radio or TV or a billboard or something. Now you have this massive podcast. You have a lot of ears listening. People will pay to get the attention of the people who are paying attention to you. It's kind of the same thing on the meme page. I have eyeballs, and people who have a product or service and a budget want to get their product or service in front of people, and they'll come to people like me to put their product or service out in front of my people.
Hold on a second, because the line's a little shaky and it's driving me nuts. But I've always said to people, because, you know, I've been doing this for 10 and a half years. When I started doing podcasts, and I was like, well, what do you do? How do you get paid? And I'm like, look, you can watch a TV show or you can listen to a radio show and there's commercials, you know, but you go to the beach and there's a plane dragging a Takati banner. Mm-hmm. It's like, what is that? Well, that's just Takati dragging on the back of an airplane.
Where the eyeballs? Where the eyeballs are.
X amount of people sitting on the beach on the 4th of July, and they figure out a way, Takati figures out a way to pay somebody who drags a thing, and that's how they do it. I don't see that there, if you can picture a banner dragging off the back of a slow moving Cessna flying above the beach on a 4th of July, and then you can picture, you know, a race car that says cool cigarettes or Coke or Pepsi or whatever on it. And then you can picture a sitcom with commercial breaks. Everyone must fall somewhere in between those, right?
That's a banner and a commercial.
That's all it is. Let's see if Tank.
Yep.
So what is the process? Like, do you have to get up in the morning and start scrubbing, or do you watch all the, you know, if there's a coronation with the crown and the prince, you have to watch that, or a big heavyweight fight?
Yeah, it's just, you know, you have to be aware a lot. As with any kind of creative process, whether you're a writer, musician, comedian, you got to pay attention to your life. If you're spaced out, you know, you're not going to create anything. You're just going to go do a job that anybody could do. So I have to pay attention. And I'm forced, thankfully, to live my life. Like, I know a lot of people who I started out with who got very addicted to the likes and the followers. And because of that, the only thing they wanted to do was spend time on the internet to feed that beast. I'm an older person than a lot of these people. I'm 38 now. I had a career, wife, kids, friends, gym, other stuff that I do. I couldn't hide out in the internet. So because of that, my content always stayed fresh, because every day that I live, I have another experience. And I'm just always either looking at pictures and trying to extract some kind of humor from it, or paying attention during my life and saying that would be either good on stage as a joke if I can make it a 2 or 3 minute bit, or that's a 15 word joke and that's the most it's going to be. Those jokes become the meme.
Tank, thanks for joining us. I'm going to pop you on hold again, because your stupid line is driving me nuts, which could go no other way. It's like, it's insane. It's like it had Mark Garagus, we're going to Skype him in.
No,
like, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Like, oh, but Skype's a much better. Yeah, it's much better when it works, but it doesn't work a lot. Like, we have to just hang up and call back and whatever. It's weird. I know. Maybe I'm asking too much. Maybe this is one of those things, like when you get a 20-minute flight delay to New York, you're like, oh, boy, it's ruined now.
Here we go again.
The week's ruined. Yeah. People used to die on that journey.
2019, though, it'd be nice to be able to use a phone.
So, I don't know. I feel like we have to test it or something. Mm. Anyway, I can't complain. I can't talk. My phone doesn't work in my own goddamn house. The movie, the documentary, Meme Gods, and that's where Tank's on. I was telling you about that before. And you can invest in the film at microventures.com/Adam and go there and be a part of one of our docs. and invest in it. All right, Akbar Bajabi Amelia.
That's right.
Ooh, look at you.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah, if you slow down, you get hurt. Like when you say his name, it's like when Wile E. Coyote could make it across the canyon, but he looks down.
He can't realize it.
If you look down, that's when you drop.
Yeah.
And if you stop, that's when you run into problems. I love this dude.
Yeah.
Talk about a dude that doesn't have a dad bod. But now I'm thinking I could kick his ass. You know what I mean?
Ruiz inspired you.
He's inspired me to throw down with guys who are super built.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get a camera in here.
Give it a shot.
We'll take a quick break. Be right back with him right after this.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
And now, another actual five-star iTunes review of the podcast, read by Adam's buddy, Oswaldo.
I've been listening to Ace for about 12 years now. I never guessed all how no one guy's riff song and the funny thing I ever hear is still amazing me.
Well, that's a mouthful. Thanks, Oz. Go to iTunes, rate and review the podcast, and maybe Ozzy will butcher your review, too. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Akbar Bajabi Amelia.
Yeah. You do a little fancy thing at the end there.
I got it.
But that was good.
Everyone can be a ninja. And by the way, I'll tell you all about the book in a second. Host of American Ninja Warrior, which everyone loves. Going, God, season 11. And NFL player, ex-NFL player, Raiders, Chargers, Dolphins, defensive end, linebacker. It's been a while. But I love your energy, and it's great to see you again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
The book, it is Everyone Can Be a Ninja, Find Your Inner Warrior and Achieve Your Dreams, available now on Amazon. And enjoy and bookmark us and click through, and then that way it's win-win. And American Ninja Warrior Wednesdays, 8 o'clock, NBC. I just remember how positive and focused you were last time we spoke, and it's been a couple of years, but I keep drilling down on this because I think we're going insane. And okay. I think people are staring at too many screens, and there's too much Twitter, and there's too much information, and there's too many video games. Yeah. And it's like people need to get back to a little something called grit. Like just get out there, start toughing it out.
Yeah, yeah. And I totally agree with you. You know, I was watching a clip of you. This is probably a while back. And you said something that stuck with me, and you were talking about us living in a Purell-type society, and I thought it was beautifully said, where you want to sanitize everything, and you want to make sure that your kid doesn't get hurt, and your kid gets the participation trophy, and I do think that it takes away from the human spirit. The human spirit is very resilient. We're resilient, but we're going to lose that resiliency the more we sanitize and wash everything down. Like, you learn from those mistakes. You learn from your failures. And what I know to be true is that where I got to wasn't because I made excuses or because somehow everything was just laid out. It was just I had a lot of tough times that I learned from. So instead of looking at it and viewing it as a stumbling block, I looked at it as a stepping stone. And everything, to me, is just like a challenge. It's like, oh, man, like I can't get into this door. Well, how about this? And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I've been trying to get into that Ferrari door and get me a Ferrari. I'm joking. I don't want to drive a Ferrari. But you get the point is that, you know, being able to maybe want to attain something and maybe you aren't able to get it and it takes you somewhere else.
Well, also, since, you know, when did failure or coming up short or any of that stuff, when did that become such a thing to avoid? You know, I mean, losing, getting beat by another team or another man or not achieving whatever. That's just a big part of life. That's the lion's share of life.
Yeah.
When did that become something we need to avoid at all costs?
Entitlement, I think, is kind of what has bred that along, because someone just said to me the other day, one of my good buddies was like, nope, it's not failure. It's just a learning lesson. Mm-hmm. It's true, but he said it in a way to soften the idea. Failure's supposed to sting. And it hurts. I talk about this. Yeah, it does hurt.
You.
And I'll tell you this. In the NFL, there's nothing worse. I mean, there's nothing worse than Monday morning when you have to watch film. Losing on Sunday hurts.
You get graded out by the coach.
But on Monday, in front of your peers, and your coach calls you out, and to be that guy, and I've been on that end several times where the coach is calling specifically you out, and everybody's just turning around. All 53 or 52 guys are just looking back. The other coach, your position coach, is looking at you. See what I tell you this whole week, because he doesn't want the blame for it. And that feeling, that embarrassment. Well, of course, at 3 o'clock when you got to go out on the field, oh, you're trying to make a statement to the coach. Like, I learned from my mistake. I learned. Yeah, it's accountability. But if I go, oh, no, it's just a learning lesson, Akbar. It's okay. You know, you're going to learn from this and you'll be better. I feel better about myself. And I go out there and make the same mistake. But when you feel that embarrassment, that shame.
That's right. Yeah, seriously.
But it's a part of it. But I hate that we're trying to soften that.
Yeah. And we're also doing this thing that I've been really drilling down on recently, which is this thing where I call it reverse engineering, but that's sort of a positive thing. We're doing a thing where we go, too many kids are getting suspended at this high school. What do we do about it? And obviously, to fix the problem, you need to talk to the parents. You need to talk to the kids. You need to figure out what's going on at home that these kids are acting out at school. But you don't fix the problem by just telling the teachers not to suspend anyone anymore.
Right.
I mean, technically, yeah, you'll cut it down on suspensions, but it doesn't really fix the problem, and it doesn't serve the kid. So it's sort of like you lost, but you know a guy who owns the scoreboard. He can go change the numbers on it. But yes, now you technically have a higher number than the visiting team does. But did you win? Did you learn anything? Purell is sort of that way. It's like germs make you sick. Okay, go out and be amongst them. Build up your immunity, and fight those germs.
Yes.
Or we could just kill everything and put you in a bubble.
Right. I totally agree. And I'll never forget my very first fight at Dublin Elementary School, now called Tom Bradley Elementary School, growing up. And I got into a fight with a kid who later became my friend, Johnny Smith. Such a generic name, but that was really his name. Yeah, but Johnny.
Tom Bradley is in the mayor of
He used to come to our school. Dr. Shepherd, who's the principal at school for over 40 years, just passed away. But they had a close relationship, and he would come to school. I met him several times as a kid. Tom Bradley. So he would come to school. So anyway, they eventually named it to him. But I remember getting to a fight in front of the school, and my parents came. The whole night, it was a big deal. And that suspension that I felt like, oh my goodness, like A, I was missing out on school. B, I've got this like this thing on my record. Like I've been suspended. I mean, that was a bad thing. And I never wanted to get suspended. And that was the only time I had ever gotten suspended. It was in the second grade in Mrs. Franklin's class. I was in Ms. Franklin's class.
Tom Bradley, I believe, was a standout athlete at UCLA.
Is that right? I didn't know that. He was tall. I remember, at least as a kid, I remember him being tall.
Tom Bradley, as I recall, I wasn't there watching him, but I remember hearing he ran track. I think he made.
Are you making this up?
He's captain of the track team, and he played baseball and like football too. I think he was all city tackle in high school.
Are you making this up?
Captain of the track team. No, why would I? Oh yeah, you never see a black tall guy in athletics. He was an accountant.
There had to have been one in history.
No, I would have never.
The only rangy black man to ever endeavor to involve himself in track.
I would have never. I just know him as the mayor. So
because you know him as like old guy.
That's true. Yeah, because I was a kid.
At some point, he was 19 and he was running all over everyone. Yeah. He had an athletic scholarship to UCLA in 1937.
Wow.
What? That was during the Great Depression?
He ran track.
It's a valuable scholarship back then.
He then ran Los Angeles.
Shit.
He got the name. We're looking at a picture of him running track.
Those delts.
How did you guys pull this up that quickly?
I have a crack team that has a crack computer, and they do my bidding. Ugh. So Tom Bradley, And then was the mayor of Los Angeles for, I don't know, two terms or something. Seems like he was around for
very popular.
Around for a while. Has a terminal named after him.
And the international terminal.
Airport, yep. Mm-hmm.
And also, evidently, we had the O'Reilly or O'Malley. What was your school called?
Dublin. It used to be called Dublin. Yes, Dublin. And now it's Tom Bradley Elementary. You better recognize, man. That's in South Central LA, man. You better recognize. And guess what? It's not too far from Obama.
Recognize?
Yes. And it's not too far from Obama Road. They just changed Rodeo Road to Obama Road and King Boulevard. And did you know King Boulevard and Obama Road meets together? Mm. They intersect right in front of my rival high school, Dorsey High School.
Right there.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's a great neighborhood. There's this thing called gentrification that's happening.
Oh, good.
But before gentrification, it was still a great neighborhood.
Yeah. Cesar Chavez got himself a street.
Yep. Ooh.
Everyone's got a street, but
you don't.
I don't have a street. Well, listen.
Not yet.
He has a day.
I'm looking at, you know what? Let's see if we can find some kind of sex scandal or something in Bradley's back. See if we can find
a
Dennis Yearbook. See if he's in blackface. We'll get his name pulled off the terminal. We'll get my name put up there.
That's going to be a tough one.
He may massage someone unwelcome.
But can I say something about that? I know you're joking around.
He was old. He was a mayor from 73 to 93?
There you go.
Beloved.
A 20-year run.
That's pretty good for LA.
Insane.
Yeah. I met him in the 80s, in 86, 87, 88.
Height of his powers.
Yeah. One homeless guy that entire time. Now we have 2 billion. Sorry. What were we going to say?
You were just talking about the whole like scandal and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we've lost forgiveness in our society has blown my absolute mind.
Donald Trump's the president.
Okay.
I know what you're saying.
I'm not going there. But I'm just talking about the idea that you make a mistake in your past and all of a sudden you lose everything in your future. If you did something when you were a kid and you made a mistake at 16, 17 and it comes back up somehow, all of a sudden you're responsible for that. You know what I mean?
It's going to have a byproduct.
What's the byproduct?
The byproduct is going to be no contrition, no apologies.
Yeah.
It's all circle the wagons and fight it out. There would be no reason, whether you're a politician or you're looking to be confirmed in the Supreme Court or whoever you were, you have to fight everything now. You can't go, that's true. I'm sorry I did that. Yeah. It was a different time. I apologize. I'd like to turn the page and move on because that ain't going to work. That's not going to work anymore.
And it blows my mind because I'm going to tell myself, hopefully I don't run for president or something later in life and then, you know, regret and be mad at you that I said this. So you can just edit this out if somebody wants to come hear it. This is a podcast. Okay. So I remember as a little kid, my parents didn't really give us money because they didn't have it to give us. And so we would walk by a liquor store and look, I feel embarrassed because now I feel like this is going to come back and haunt me. But we were hungry after school. And I remember I got caught stealing soda.
Oh,
soda and apple pie.
Can we say that?
How dare you?
And I got caught and the store owner got me like this and he was like, hey, call the cops, call the cops.
Wow.
And he's shaking me like this. And I'm like, I'm crying because I know, forget the cops. My dad is going to kill me. Like, I am done.
20 years later, there's a Raiders game on TV and the old shop owner goes, you see that guy? I kicked his ass.
Well, a guy, I think he was an angel. Seriously, he was a black angel. He walked in as this old dude. And he looked at me, he says, will you ever steal again? I go, no. And I'm crying. I'm like, no, I will never steal again. I'll never steal again. He goes, let him go. I ran out of that thing so fast, my heart beating so fast. To this day, I still have not gone back in that store because I'm still afraid. Because I would see the guy as I was walking to school, and I would see him in there. I was like, oh my God, I was just so embarrassed.
Pictures on the wall.
Yeah, right. So, but I said that because I'm like, man, what if that came back in the past and go, oh, you know what? Headline, Akbar Baja Biamila lose host job because he canceled him because he stole as a young kid. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and to me, I just like the idea. Now, me saying that, if I lost my job, how crazy would that be? The Twitter world goes crazy. Instagram go crazy. And I was just like, man, I was wrong. I apologize. But I mean,
you've obviously grown since you were a kid.
I've grown since then. Like, I mean, can you imagine? I'm 40. You know what I mean? So people who've done stuff in the mistake 20, 30 years later, they're still saying, lose your job for what you do. Now, yes, apologize, but all this calling for jobs and assassination
is
crazy.
Why do you have to lose your ability to pay taxes? You know what I mean? Like, well, you're not a camp counselor. Let people keep their jobs. Mm-hmm. I don't know, punish them in some other fashion, but let them
keep earning.
Let them earn and pay taxes. That's it's a weird and sort of it's a dark impulse to go, I'm not going to let you ply your trade anymore. Like you're not going to be able to take care of your family anymore because I'm going to make sure you can't exist essentially, which is what we have in a modern day. I want to ask, you've given two examples, and so before you came in earlier today, I was yelling at my assistant, Matt, about the subject of change. I said, so many people have a gin rummy hand, and
I don't know what that is.
It's the white man's game. It's no dominoes.
They got dominoes.
They got a hand, and I don't know how to play gin rummy either, but you get dealt a hand, and you start like discarding the cards that don't really work, and you keep the ones that do work, sort of like most card games, but this one just sort of keeps going. It's like the same hand. You keep discarding. You keep getting.
You're trying to build a hand.
Trying to build a hand.
Okay.
And so I say to people all the time, because we laugh about it over here, most people you know have a hand. I'd like to know how many cards in your room, but I'm just going to make it.
Nobody's going to know the
I know the answer.
Oh, except
I'm almost positive it increases with every round. Like the first round, it's five, then it's six, then it's so it increases every round.
Are you a grandmother?
My grandma played it with me.
You have 10 cards. Mm-hmm. Three of them you don't need, and seven of those cards are working to build your hand. Please discard those three. I have people protecting those three. You know what I mean? That's all those people you know where it's
devil
like,
you know.
Yeah, they go like, you know, this guy's a good guy and do that, but he's always late, or he's always does this, or this is where he falls short, or here's where she falls short. She does this X, Y, and Z real well, but you know, don't ask her to do this. And I'm like, why aren't they trying to discard those cards? Why aren't they going, I got a strong hand, but I could have a better hand if I worked on these three cards? Why are they protecting those cards? Why are they so invested in those cards? Get rid of them, throw them down, take a new set, take a draw, see what you got. But it's true that most people, not the super successful people, the super successful people are constantly trying to get rid of the cards that don't work and trying to build their hand and grow. So we were discussing that a few hours ago, and then you come in here, and you're talking about getting in a fight and getting suspended and having your parents down there and like, you crying and like never going to happen again, and then getting caught stealing the soda and having the guy shake you by the lapels, and then saying you're never going to go back there. Like you're never – so you're a person that makes mistakes and then learns from your mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. I don't want to sound trite. It's impossible not to. So many people I know make mistakes, defend mistake, argue about mistake, accuse you of making the same mistakes earlier in the day, and then storm off and make the same mistakes for the rest of your life. You're not that person. You learn, you watch the game film, you get critiqued by the linebacker coach, and then you go out on the field and you work doubly hard not to let yourself bite on the, you know, drop in your hook zone and not get burned again or whatever it is. What is that about you? Of course, it's why you're so successful. Why do so many people fight that?
Well, I think I have to give credit to my parents, because growing up in a Nigerian household where my parents were constantly on top of us to improve, you know, whether it was academically or cleaning up or just being, you know, in line, because they didn't want us to fall victim to the streets. And so they're essentially always critiquing us. Same thing in sports. You're constantly, if you're going to be better, if you're going to play at a high level, you have to be used to getting critiqued. And I think it's now at a point to where people just can't take constructive criticism. And so when I'm getting women, I got a lot of whoopings growing up. I mean, for the smallest thing, my dad said, do this, you didn't do it. There's no, okay, I'm going to give you a second, third, fourth, fifth chance. But what you did from that is I learned through that, the way my parents parented us, I learned essentially how to make the correction so I didn't get in trouble again. And the same thing in the sporting world. I told my daughter, who came to me because of her volleyball coach, she started crying. She was like, am I lazy? And I was like, well, why are you asking me? My coach said I was lazy. And she was looking to me to comfort her. And I said, well, why did the coach call you lazy? And I could tell she was starting to get uncomfortable with it. And I was like, why would you say that? Well, I need to find out. he said for me to do this thing and whatever. And I said, can you tell somebody else to do it? I said, well, yeah, that's a lazy approach, because whatever he was asking you to do, because it was too difficult, you didn't want to do it. So you passed it off and said, well, somebody else can do it. I was like, no, that's a lazy approach. Doesn't mean you're lazy in that sense, but you're lazy because you didn't want to work through it. And that's constructive criticism. And she was just, you could just tell she was uncomfortable.
So betrayed by dad, who was supposed to make it better.
But she needs to get it. She needs to get used to it, because that's where you learn. And I think now, if you don't have that, it's going to be very hard to grow. It's going to be very hard to be able to monitor yourself, because the hardest person to get to know is yourself, because we all have denial. God has blessed us all with denial, and we can deny the things we don't like about ourselves and see ourselves through this perfected or whatever, this different lens, because other people see you differently than you see yourself. And that's the thing, because you probably, if you hang around me long enough, you'll know my weaknesses better than I know my weaknesses, because I don't want to pay attention to those things.
I'm thinking about Nigerian dudes. Can you find who in the UFC is Nigerian? I think there's a middleweight that just took a strap that's Nigerian. Yeah, could be that dude. I don't know if Francis Ngannou, I don't know if he's Nigerian.
Ngannou sounds like a Nigerian. He sounds like he's Igbo.
Oh, we can look and see if Francis Ngannou. But I think there was a middleweight had a fight about a month and a half or 2 months ago. Might be a Nigerian guy. Oh, Kamaru Usman. Yeah. If you find the right picture of that guy. Okay, I'm going to make an argument.
Okay.
I think Nigerians may be like a superior race. I think this could be a whole Black Panther thing going on.
Okay.
They're physically, when you see Christian Okoye, there's physically something going on with that. I mean, this ain't regular genetics. This is superior genetics. Christian Okoye was 245 pounds, had thighs that were 27 inches around, ran track for Cal Poly.
Azusa Pacific. Nigerian history.
Sorry. Come on. They're probably 10 miles apart. Azusa Pacific, someone handed him a football and just said, here's your new sport. Like, run that direction. He runs over everybody. I'm looking at you, your brother. I'm looking at this guy, Usman from the USC, Ngannou. I'm starting to think, we see these guys with their shirts off. This ain't the same. They don't have the same muscles I have. There's something going on. There's a superiority thing going on. And then there's an intellectual superiority coming on, because they're coming over here and they're just kicking ass.
You know what it is? Obviously, genetics is what it is. I can't explain it. I just was born this way. But from the intellectual standpoint, let me tell you, my parents were less interested. I talk about it in my book. My parents were less interested. What is this football thing you are talking about? You go, heat, heat, heat. What is all this? You better go read your book, is what my dad would tell me. All the time. And, you know, my dad didn't understand football. Football, this is not football. Do you know this is something else? Football is, soccer, we call soccer. So he would argue about that. It wasn't until my brother made it to the NFL that my dad appreciated it. Oh, I guess you can do something. But almost like he was upset. He was proved wrong, but he doesn't want to say, oh, I guess you can do something with your life with this football thing. Okay, go play it then, I guess. It was be a lawyer. It's how you're raised. You ask any Nigerian, lawyer, doctor, engineer, or engineer. Those were kind of like your option. My mother and my father, every time they had a Nigerian person come over, Gami, come here. I want you to meet this person's a doctor. This person's a doctor. This person's a lawyer. I want you to talk. Constantly, I'm like, gosh, leave me alone with
here's
this.
Here's my thing with the Nigerians. Now, you take Gina's tribe over there, the Jews.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
If somebody said, look, we got the SATs, we need someone to take the SATs, then we got the NFL combines after that, I'd be like, okay, we'll definitely get the Jew on that SATs, but don't get him anywhere near the field. We don't need that. We don't want that.
We'll not in Annapolis.
We'll have a panic
attack.
Going near that 225 bench press or the vertical leap or the 40-yard. We're not going to
stay out of Indiana.
Bird bones.
Think of this as the ultimate compliment. You go SATs, NFL combine, Nigerian guy. You'd be like, oh, which way would I push him? I could make a good argument for both. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's quite the compliment.
Do you have do you have Kamaru Usman? Whatever. I mean, this guy is a genetic.
Well, how do you not have a visceral reaction?
Guy's a genetic freak.
But like, is he? Can we confirm that he's Nigerian? Because I don't. No. I'm not familiar with him.
I don't.
Oh yeah, he's Nigerian. It's a Nigerian flag.
That's my Nigerian brother.
Yeah, it's my Nigerian brother.
The guy has muscle. The guy has muscles coming out of the side of his muscles with like no waist and all veins and
wings.
Green, white, green. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, there's something genetically going on here that you don't see.
I look like that too.
No, I know, but
that's what I'm saying.
Prove it,
Andy.
Pull up my Ninja Run for Red Nose Day. You'll see it.
Andy Ruiz does not look like this guy in his underpants.
If you squint,
you squint and face the other direction.
If you scratch your cornea.
Now I gotta watch. I gotta watch this UFC guy. I mean, I'm all in supporting, but you know, to be fair though, like I said, you know, just the academically, I remember, you know, when I graduated from college. And I told my dad, hey, you know, I've got my bachelor's degree, because my dad made it very difficult to say, you know, I'm proud of you, you know, academically. Hey, I graduated from high school. Well, you still have college.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Dad, I graduated from college, got my bachelor. You can still go get your master's degrees. And it's not master's, it's master's. Because you have to get your ask any Nigerian. I mean, it's always they got their master's or their PhD. I have you have to go get your PhD. What? Like,
I don't want to slow your roll, but I'm not going to ask any Nigerians because I'm scared I'll either be beaten to death or verbally dressed down.
Intellectually dominated.
Either way,
lose.
These are their superior people.
Yeah, there's
Akbar.
We're looking at you.
I don't necessarily look like, what's his name here?
You look pretty damn good.
You're a goddamn
that
action
guy's
figure.
160 pounds. This is a genetic superiority, is it not? There's something genetically going on here.
Yeah, but this sample size, yeah.
It's the food, because we eat egusi soup, inyong, fufu.
I love fufu.
Yes!
I used to work with two Nigerians.
Yes. What was that noise you just made?
No, it's our expression that we use. Like, I'm in shock. That means I'm shocked.
Like, no
yes.
shit?
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So wait, what are you eating?
Dodo, egusi soup, inyong, amala, gari, chin-chin, goat meat. Jollof rice, stockfish. What else do we eat?
I don't know, but someone's got to tell Andy Ruiz. We're getting off the chalupas, and we're on to this.
Jollof rice.
Get that fufu.
I've never thought about, you know, it's easy to do the thing where you go, well, this guy's, you know, this spindly Asian guy, he's good at math, but how's he going to do on the gridiron? And there's a back and a forth version of that. I don't know. I'm starting to think you guys may be like, maybe we should all just figure out what's in the water over there, or what's in the couscous or the goat whatever.
My dad would not let you just say it anyways. No. Egusi soup.
Egusi soup.
Egusi.
Egusi.
You have to repronounce soup, too.
Soup. Oops.
Soups. Egusi. Oops. I spilled some soups.
Jesus Christ.
All right.
I've only got so many drops.
Let me tell you about Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you save a bunch of money on your auto insurance? You go to geico.com. 15 minutes, could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Extra money. You take that money, you put it in your pocket. It'll be the most rewarding thing you do all day. That is Geico. Geico.com. Take that extra time and take that extra money and put it in your pocket. Is Francis Ngannou, is he Nigerian? If he is, I'm moving. I'm not going to move, but I'm going to drop my kids off and just have them raised there.
He sounds Igbo too. Francis is a common Nigerian name, even though it's not Nigerian, but Francis, there are a lot of Nigerian names. But Ngannou, NG, if it's NG, then chances are he is Nigerian. He's from the Igbo tribe as well. I'm from the Yoruba tribe.
He's
Cameroonian.
Sorry. Because that guy's a freak of nature as well. All right, let's take a quickie break, and we'll come back, and we'll do the news right after this.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat.
Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.